Thank you for tuning in to this message from Kingdom Heirs International, headquarters located in Flagstaff, Arizona.
So, with that excitement of tonight and what's going to be released, and I know that they are going to be carrying the last 3 weeks as well, as far as moving into this portion and knowing how they are not ones, just like Gabe is working on compartmentalization. I would say that we all are to a certain degree, right? A lifestyle. I mean, even the word last week of, is this your life? Do you recognize, in religion, we did not. We did not recognize that we operated in a structure where we got a shot in the arm, and that was all that we knew of a relationship with Yahweh or with one another, for that matter. Yeah. And so we can't believe that we are so good already at living a lifestyle unto him when we haven't even received the fullness of what life looks like when it's lived for him. Yeah. Right? But what I do know is that they know how to carry one thing into the next, which is why they've been entrusted in breaking a people out of the cycle of compartmentalization and complacency, to where it has been such a lifestyle and a hunger for it to be a lifestyle in their lives and in the life of their family that we're here now. Right? So I'm excited to sit under tonight's portion, knowing that it's not just, well, we're back now and so here's tonight, but that they are carrying every piece of the last month and have not been separated from it, have not been apart from it, are not unfamiliar, and it's been established. It's been established in them to be able to release whatever they're carrying tonight. So to send us in, because we're working on our compartmentalization, I do want to do a little bit of a recap, like we do every week, of the last three, so that we're ready for tonight and we don't quickly forget what he has tried to establish in us so that we can fully receive tonight. Because if we don't have what came before, we can't fully receive what's here today.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. All right, so Leviticus 21 was the holiness code for the Kohanim. It was the holiness code for the priesthood, right? It was all about proximity.
Yeah.
The standard of his holiness for the priests and their household. That is you. Yeah. That is the standard of holiness over your lives, right? While we're receiving the holiness code, which isn't just in that portion, but it's everything we're receiving, his instructions, his standards, his character, that is how you are called to live your life. Okay, as we're receiving that, from now on, like on our journey, it's all about Yahweh wanting your life, your worship, and your service to him to not be lorded over by death. Okay, that was kind of a big picture from Leviticus 21, and a huge aspect of the heart of us moving from death to life isn't just because you're his and because he loves you and because he wants you to have the fullness of life in him, but it's also because you are meant to serve him, right? That you are responsible for the provisions of his house. Okay. Then we moved into Leviticus 22 and 23. And that portion started with the priests being instructed to separate themselves from the holy things. Yeah. So adding to what Gabe was just speaking over us, this is everything we must apply now to our lives.
Yes.
What are the holy things that he is asking of us to once again restore to a holy state because we've made them common? And part of recognizing this transfer of things that we have been holding as common or we've made common is acknowledging that all of these things are his.
Yeah.
We're stewards, but they're his. They belong to him. So while we get ready for the word tonight, I have the same questions as Gabe. What about a night like tonight do we take or do we make common? His word, an appointed seat, our own equipping in priesthood, remembering that to make something common is a dishonor of his very name.
Yeah.
Okay, so not just the literal word that we receive can we make unholy, meaning his word is holy.
Yeah.
Every Friday you receive that word.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you receive it as holy?
Yeah.
Do you regard it as holy? Do you regard the seats that deliver that word as holy? That's how we're posturing ourselves tonight. And recognizing that our own equipping in the priesthood is something that we can make common.
Yeah.
A night like tonight is meant to equip you in your priesthood. All right, then we moved into Leviticus 24, and it was all about daily life. That was my favorite portion. Last week was my favorite, by far. Because if there's anything that I want to grow in, it is about ensuring that every single moment of my life, talk about decompartmentalization, that every single moment, not just when there's a feast, not just when I come to a Friday night, but every moment of my life, I am carrying the things that he says are holy, and I am making nothing about my life common, because it's ultimately on behalf of his. Okay? All right, so there's one standard we walked away with when it came to justice, but in general, last week, that there is one standard that we are called to live by. There is one. There's one standard for you. He has one. You come under it, and you are to be held accountable to it. And we don't have the right to accuse or bring our own humanity in opposition to whatever that standard is, because he is Lord.
Yeah.
We get more of that tonight.
Yeah.
All of that is really good. Like, all of that is really, really, really good news. Part of what we ended with last week is when he says that there is one standard, what does that say about who you are? You're his. If he had a different standard for you, and then he had a separate standard for his people, it would mean you're not his chosen people.
Yeah.
You're not his.
Right.
That's good.
Do you want to be an outsider? Absolutely not. We want to be fully brought in, which means we get to sit under this holy seat in this holy word and receive that one standard. And while we do, what we're receiving is our identity, as he says, you're mine. Can I tell you what that means for you? That's all we're doing. And I don't mean that's all we're doing in that. It's all we're doing. It's casual. But in the middle of all of your press and your wrestling and your old mindset and your day and everything else, that what you're receiving every single week now, every day, as we dive into his standards, is your identity, because you're his.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We're excited to receive more.
Yeah, so it's good to be home. And it's good to see everybody and be surrounded by everybody. And before Mom gets into the teaching on tonight's Torah portion, I just think it's interesting and amazing what everybody shared up to this point, the environment that's been set. And it's always, for me and for us, it's always interesting to leave for a certain amount of time and just be in a totally different environment, a totally different region, surrounded by different people, and then be able to come back to what we consider home, which is all of you guys. And when you even thinking about tonight's Torah portion, it's interesting to me that not only are we able to be released for a sustained amount of time and have people here to essentially carry the baton or keep the flame lit in the house, in the temple, while we're gone, and be able to come back and have that synergy over that extended amount of time. It's pretty amazing to think about. And I want you guys to know that when we leave and we drive across the country and experience those differences of culture and environment, it really is, there really is no comparison to the life and the refreshment that we have here in this family, in this community that Yahweh gave us. right? And I say that not as a, I mean, we say that often, and it's not as a, it's not a pride thing. It's a gratitude thing, because Yahweh gave us all this community.
Yeah.
Right? And he gave us this path to follow. But what's interesting about it is even in this, in seasons past that weren't as refreshing or filled with life, you could say they're filled with death or suffering or whatever the case may be, challenges, there was also gratitude for that, because that was the path that he gave us, so it was his.
Sure.
Right? So I just want to say it's for us to know, and just to encourage the family, that there really is, in our experience, we're not saying, you know, it's impossible or you can't find it anywhere, but just like Gabe said, in our experience, we've gone to visit other communities or be in other environments, and it's just, it's almost oppressive. And to come back and to be received by everybody and to just experience honor and the way that it flows in the house, and, you know, knowing that discipleship is ongoing and that flame is staying lit because people are stewarding that, is a big deal. And for us to just be mindful of that in terms of, like I said, in light of tonight's Torah portion, even what we experience here, it's not any of ours. If you think of it that way, then you'll embrace it even that much more.
Yeah.
Right? Think about mm-hmm. that. If you embrace something that's not yours that he gave you. I want to make sure I say this correctly.
Yeah, say it correctly.
If no, this is going to help us.
It is.
If
I promise.
Well, let me say it this way and work backwards. Even suffering that you go through belongs to him.
Yeah.
Think about that. The suffering that you go through, we will own that suffering like it is all ours. Right?
That's good.
When you suffer, you'll be like, this is my suffering. But it's not your suffering, it's his suffering, if you're on the path that he called you to be on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So leading up to the path that he has us on now has been based on or predicated on challenging times, times of suffering, times of growth, times of pain, and we also have to give him glory for that, because that belongs to him. He gave that to you.
Yeah.
But now we're in a season of such life and refreshment, and when we travel around, it is almost like, I don't even know how to, it is just stifling, oppressive. When you're out of a system, it makes you sick to be in the system, but not of it.
Yeah.
Right? It should make us sick. So it just gives you even more ability to do everything that everybody's already talked about tonight, and just having gratitude of what Yahweh has given us, even if it's challenging, even if it's a lot. Even you already know mom is going to just release fire and it's going to be crazy, and you already know it's going to be a lot. Right? And it might be pressing, but that's something Yahweh gave us to be thankful for. So,
yeah. Yeah.
And a huge part of that is being able to leave and just know that what's special about it is a family unit stewarding the house. It's pretty amazing. And that's rare as well. So thank you guys.
Anything on Leviticus 25?
Hmm?
Anything on Leviticus 25?
No.
Well, he owns all this. He owns all this.
Oh, I have a pattern in my notes. Oh my gosh, you guys, we're going to be all right. Everything's going to be fine. I just don't know if this is the pattern that's going to come out. I kind of feel like I'm just going to have to go for it on this. Anytime you, Megan did a recap. I want to do a recap, but from a mother's perspective. It's almost like when you leave and you have, you know, the older brother or sister taking care of the family, then you come back And then the parents have a perspective on how things have progressed. So in hearing and sitting under her word, I just want to make sure that we do have a word before we move into tonight. Let me say why. We are coming towards the end of Leviticus. And with that, this entire portion, while I do believe can be pressing, is a huge, huge, huge promise. It does tie with everything that I've been saying. You have no idea when we say what good news there is. We have no idea. And I've been saying Leviticus is allowing us to tap into some of it, which is why the questions are going where they're going.
Yeah.
This is going to be no different tonight. If anything, it probably really stirred you in not just recognizing today, but it's starting to get you to recognize the future even more so than any other chapter we've been in. And so there is such promise. So I don't want to jump into the promise without recognizing that that promise is for his chosen people who are set apart and operate under the holiness code. You don't operate under that code, you are out. So the good news is for those in his system, which I'm going to get into as far as the system. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So like listening to even just last week and talking about, you know, or the week prior was the feasts and recognizing that there's these instructions for these appointed times, and then moving into and even in the priesthood, it's first in service. Well, what if you're outside of service, or what if it's outside of a feast? It's that daily living. And so I want to go over just a couple of things. I want to make sure that we're understanding that ultimately in the last 3 weeks, the word that has come forth is he is revealing how holy he is and how unholy you are. Okay? That's what's happening. That's why this is all a press. This is good and shouldn't be condemning, because he's teaching us how to be holy as I'm holy. And if the ancient Israelites needed to be told that, I'm pretty sure the the Gen Z needs to hear that. So he's exposing his level of greatness and your level of wickedness. The problem is that because of religion, we've been delusioned to think we are as holy, if not holier, than him. We know better. We understand more. I mean, I know you would never say that, but in our daily life, our mindsets, the way we walk, our behavior, our pushback towards his instructions is showing that gap. So it is the most beautiful thing to recognize his holiness and your unholiness. It is not a beautiful thing to recognize his holiness and say, and I've obtained that. That is dangerous, because then you're not able to address the gap. You're just in a delusion. Okay. Now what's happening is I'm going to say it a little bit more bolder, if this is okay. The reason why we're delusioned through religion that we've already obtained holiness is because we've slapped a name on it and said, therefore I am. Now, that doesn't dismiss that in him that's there, but he is the way, not... He's a way. He's not a slap the name on it. He's not a free ticket. He's a way. He in and of himself is a way. So it doesn't make sense to just say in him I am, if you're not, because what's happening is then, let me take it a step further, you're learning that you're actually not in him. So ultimately what's happening is we're unraveling salvation to understand salvation. Does that make sense? Like whether I say it that way, that he's exposing his holiness and our unholiness, another way to say it is he's actually exposing that you've said I am in him and you're actually not in him. That's another way to put it. That's the journey we've been on. is recognizing that his ways, we actually have been saying that we're following him, and we haven't been following anything of his ways.
Yeah.
Right? Even down to the delusion that you will sanctify your wickedness and say that it's holy.
Yeah.
Here's an example. She talked about the common things and making things common, things that are holy and making it common. One example that I believe she gave, and one of the things that we had talked about was even up to it, is marriage.
Yep. Yep.
So we have said, I am married, he's mine, I'm his, and I am now sanctioned under a covenant, so anything we say goes in that covenant. And I've been delusioned to actually sanctify the things within our covenant because I've said it's mine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then we go through the Torah portion, and he has some instructions for some married people.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden we realize, so you're saying that this thing has to come under his thing.
Yeah.
So we can't, we're taking things that we say are ours and then sanctioning them as if they're holy and then walking outside of his ways and then delusion that we're saying that it's holy.
Does that make
sense? Yeah. Okay. So we need to acknowledge, we need to come to a place as a people that we acknowledge how much we've made common.
Yes.
We have made marriage common.
Yes.
We have made relationships common.
Yeah.
We have made parental influence common.
Yeah.
We have made siblings common. We have made parenting common.
Yeah.
We have made schooling common. We have made all of these things in our lives so common and of this world that we've separated those things from his instructions so much so that we can't even identify when he comes in and says, I want to restructure this.
Yeah.
We're not even able to identify because we're delusions thinking that we are under his system.
Yeah.
So we're saying, no, marriage is holy, so I'm under him. Then he comes in, gives some terms, and you're having to recognize how far off you are.
Yeah.
But if you don't recognize how far off, then you're actually going to say it's sanctioned and think all those things are holy when they're not, and we've made those things common.
Yep.
Okay.
That's really good.
So, I'm going to probably get into this a little bit later because it goes into the Torah portion, I think. But another thing that Megan brought to the table was free will. This is ultimately going to set the tone, I think, for this entire Torah portion. We have learned that there is lateral and vertical. Okay.
Yeah.
So, he is fully sovereign. Yes?
Yes.
Yes.
And you have a full free will.
Yes.
Yes.
How do we reconcile that?
Yeah.
I believe today's Torah portion is going to help because I believe that on a spectrum of his full sovereignty and our full free will, I believe that Yeshua, which is at the cross, is right smack in the center. He is the perfect example of being fully under authority and fully having authority.
Yes.
Okay?
Yep.
So what I want to say is, yes, you have, if you pendulum swing all the way to he made me do it, to he's not even in my life, I did it all myself. You have to understand that your free will is also in his sovereignty because he's the one that gave you the free will in the first place.
Yes.
So even though you have free will, it was his free will that he gave.
Yes.
So the fact that you have a choice already means you're under his sovereignty because you didn't create your free will. You're just operating in something he gave you.
Yeah.
So you have a free will, but you cannot become entitled and say that it's all your authority or all your choice because you don't even have a free will unless he gave it to you in the first place. That is one way to look at this on how you reconcile full sovereignty and full free will. And how you're going to operate your will under his will and be in full authority and have him in full authority at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
That's good.
All right. Another thing, when I talk about the things under him that we've made common, one blanket thing to think about is how common have we made him?
Mm-hmm.
I'll just leave that at that. Thinking about that, I believe Leviticus has pointed out how far off we are in our entitlement and access in how common we've made him and not even recognizing that he's holy.
Yes.
That's good.
Okay? So that is the last couple of weeks leading us up to what it is that he's exposing in us as a family for us to be able to recognize what it is that he's doing so that we can fully come under his promises. Here's why I'm saying that. Before we left, the word that was brought forth by Padrino was the law of the land, remember? And he's, and what he was basically, what I got out of that whole thing at the end of the day was that if you want to receive the blessing of the law of the land,
yes,
but you do not want to come under anything,
yeah,
else in the law of the land.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is ingrained in us. How many of us for the last 20 years have quoted Deuteronomy? I am the head and not the tail.
Yeah.
But how many of you got riled up when Yahweh said, you blaspheming my name,
yeah,
you will be stoned.
Yep.
You want to be the head, but you do not want to not be able to blame him.
Yes.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. This is what's so crazy. And then we have this mindset that the Old Testament is harsh.
Yep.
Have you guys read the New?
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure it says it's unforgivable.
Yeah.
Blaspheming the Holy Spirit, which is Yahweh, is unforgivable.
Yep.
But we're going to have a problem?
Yep.
I'd rather be stoned.
We
will understand what he was saying if we understand the instructions that we're receiving.
Yep.
But does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yep.
How
yeah.
easy that is to fall under Deuteronomy. I think it's Deuteronomy 28, and quote it verbatim, or even all the blessings of even this Torah portion. But we don't like living daily life. We don't like recognizing that even if I'm a mixed multitude, I have the same standard, right? There's other things. We're receiving both. We're understanding the blessing, but we're understanding in its authenticity, not entitlement or delusion.
Amen.
Okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Did that tie up the last 3 weeks, or am I just off on a whole other path?
Yep.
Don't know. Is that right? Okay. let me just make sure. Okay. I want to start off, before I get into this Torah portion, with an overview of Leviticus, because we're rounding it out and coming towards the end. So here's the big picture of Leviticus, which we've talked about this before. The big picture of Leviticus is all about holiness. The entire book is about holiness. Okay?
Yep.
Now, here's something interesting. Leviticus is one of the top five books understudied by Christianity.
Yep.
Okay. Let me just explain. I'm just going to explain something here, which I know it seems obvious, but in delusion, it's not. The entire gospel message that we have come to know, and I'm not saying that like it's not, the entire gospel message is all about being freed from sin.
Yes.
The book that teaches how to be freed from sin, the book that teaches you what sin is that you need to be freed from, is not studied.
That's good.
Yeah.
But the entire gospel is about being freed from sin.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can say, no, Yeshua is the way that you get free from. Where do you think Yeshua is? In every page of Leviticus.
Yep.
He is the Torah. He is the truth, the way, and the life. The Torah is the truth, the way, and the life. There is no separation between Leviticus and Yeshua. When I read the book of Yeshua, I'm reading the book of Leviticus. We've already broken that down and taught on that. There is no separation. He is a living Torah scroll. He is the Torah.
Yeah.
So what we're saying is that the gospel is how to be freed from sin, saying his name did it, and we don't even study who he is. It's the book of holiness. So going back to something else Megan talked about in daily life, your witness is not you just saying something. It's you operating, being a set apart people. How can you be a set apart people if you don't know what set apart means? But you have dedicated your entire Christian life to the gospel of being a set apart person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
That's why I talk about how it's delusion, because then what have you set yourself up for apart? What have you done? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Does
that make okay?
Yes.
So this is the book of holiness.
Yeah.
All right. So I've already said this, but I have written here, the warning is disillusion that you aren't in sin and are already holy. So you're running around making everything common, which essentially is making everything wicked. Okay? Or that your sin is sanctioned under a false system while you have named it Yahweh.
Yep.
Yeah.
So you guys, that was just kind of summing up everything that I said. Yep. The reason why I'm saying that is because we know the definition of sin or is lawless, which is also equated in the scripture as wicked. The opposite of holiness is wickedness. So if this is the book of holiness, then the opposite of not understanding this would be sin, which would be lawlessness, which would be wickedness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And religion has taught us to not study this and to basically make everything common, and I believe run around making things wicked.
Yeah.
Because we're making things common. Because we don't know how to set it apart. Okay? Mm-hmm. We know this, but that's the journey that we are all on.
Yeah.
And so the title that I have for tonight is Trust in His System. To be redeemed and restored. Now, I'm using the word system for a reason. Because our story, and I believe this story, is leaving systems of this world, leaving systems of delusion, leaving your system, that was going to be an odd way of saying that. I'll just stop there. You're leaving the world systems.
Yeah.
You're leaving the demonic system. You're leaving your generational system. You're leaving that system, but in order to leave that system, we have to understand His system, which is what we've been doing in taking all of this time, is to be able to restructure His system in our hearts. Because we see through the lens of systems. We talked about this with altars. We see through the lens of the structures that have been placed in our minds and in our hearts and in our bodies. And when we leave systems, those get dismantled, and then He's taking us through a process of restructuring those systems in His system. He's not leaving you with nothing. He's giving you a replacement. He's giving you His system. But in order to receive, psychologically, in order to receive something, you have to dismantle what was there. You don't have the ability to add more. You're going to have to dismantle what was there to be able to receive a whole new system.
Yeah.
Okay? So tonight is trust in His system. All right, so let's do kind of an overview. First of all, let me give some context. I've done this before. We're still at the base of Mount Sinai.
Yeah.
We have not moved. We're still there. We had such an exciting Exodus trip. And then He's like, I'm going to need some time with you all. And doesn't it kind of feel like that? Like it feels like that. I mean, now that I'm at the base of Mount Sinai receiving the laws, I'm like, take me back to exiting Egypt. That was fun. There was manna. We saw red seas. Have you guys seen those new AI videos where the guy's like, bro, I just went through the Red Sea. Have you guys seen that? He's like, you wouldn't believe it. No, we didn't go around. We went through. I was like, I feel like that would be us. I mean, now that we're receiving a system, I'm kind of like, man, it was exciting to leave a system.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, come on. You can build your identity on leaving systems.
Really good.
You can build an identity on leaving systems. Now, is that what? Okay, so we're here. We're still at Mount Sinai, and we're going to be here for a while. Now, they're receiving these instructions, and as you guys know, this chapter, they're receiving stuff that has to do with the promised land. So they're like, all right, let's go, bro. Like, we're at the base. We're getting these instructions. We're going to be here for a year. Promised land's right around the corner. We're going to operate in all this stuff, and we're only in year one, and we all know we've got 40 years. Okay. But I mean, the context of them receiving this was like, heck yeah, let's do Jubilee, start the countdown. All right. So we're still at Mount Sinai. Now remember, all of this is how a sinful humanity can approach and worship a holy God and dwell with a holy God. That's what he's taking this time to acknowledge where you're going. We need to dwell together. And so I'm giving you instructions on how to do this.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, I think we know this in our minds, but it, you guys recognize that it's a beautiful thing to be under a standard.
Yes.
Okay. It's hard when you miss the mark. It, you know, I mean, especially when you miss the mark, you want that. Can you just lower it just this week?
Yeah.
Just, I don't like just, but thank God he doesn't.
Yeah.
Because if you were under a parent that was wishy-washy and tossed to and fro on your emotion, will you be reliving Earth under your parents?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He is so good that we want that in our flesh, but in the end, you really don't want that.
Right.
That is a traumatic way to live.
Yeah.
It is, well, I'll just say this. It's traumatizing and it breeds cancer. So it may feel good in the moment, but you're going to die.
Yeah.
If you had a parent that was tossed to and fro by manipulation or up and down standard, and you would die under that system.
Yeah.
We are dying under that system in the world.
Yeah.
He doesn't operate like that. So just remember, when you're being pressed in the standard, it is a good thing, because we wouldn't want it any other way, even though you have to abide by the standard.
Yeah.
Meaning, if he wants us to live with him, I would much rather live in his house than him have to come down and live in all of our houses.
Yeah.
It would be chaotic. It would be crazy. It wouldn't make any sense. There would be jealousy. There would be strife. Why is he over there and not here? Is this person better than me? I mean, it just, is this making sense what I'm saying as far as like the picture? It would not work other than for him to have one house, one standard, and you all have to meet it, because it doesn't physically make sense for him to abide by all of your standards and him have to be all over the place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's a good thing to be in his standard, okay? So so Leviticus 1 through 17 was, the best way to put that would be that that was the way to God. It was the instruction manual to access. 1 through 17.
Yeah.
It had to do with offerings, it had to do with purity, and it really had a lot to do with redemption. Now we're in Leviticus 18 through 27. We're in the walk with God. That's why we're in the holiness code. We're in the lifestyle. So we were learning how to have access, and then now we're learning how to operate in a lifestyle, living a holy life. People, priests, and the times. This is also about restoration. So we have redemption, and now we have restoration.
That's good.
Okay, this is kind of the overall of where we are in Leviticus. Here's a crazy picture I want you guys to see. Okay, right smack in the middle of Leviticus, after you've learned about redemption, is the Day of Atonement.
Good.
After the Day of Atonement, you live a lifestyle with Yahweh, and here we are in the Jubilee, which is restoration. This is a beautiful book. And I believe that this book is definitely, I mean, it's unlocking, like, out of a million things, we're at like 0.5. But it's unlocking a lot.
Yeah.
And I do believe that we're feeling it stir, but we don't have the ability to articulate it yet.
Yeah.
Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you have access, you have redemption, you have the Day of Atonement, you have lifestyle, we have Jubilee. It's a bigger book. Do you hear what I'm saying?
Yeah.
This is a book that does talk about our past. This is a book that is talking about during Yeshua's time. This is a book also pointing to what's going to come.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay? All right. Let me see. I have these visual pictures in my mind, and I'm not sure how I'm going to articulate these pictures, so I'm going to try. Okay, the way The way that I'm seeing this is somewhat, I know I teach you guys not to think linear, but for the sake of tonight, on a linear scale, we've talked about going back to the beginning to understand the end.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We all want the garden. And I do believe that we understand to some extent, even though we haven't really talked about it, that when the end comes, when the New Jerusalem, like the end comes, it's going to be like paradise. Okay. But to get back there, what happened after the garden that we're also going to see? Does that make sense? Like, we can't jump, we can't just, I'll get into this, but it's almost like we can't just jump. We've all talked about going back to the original intent.
Yeah.
And we all amen that is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But then when I say, but the original intent might be Leviticus, it's like, but no.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that make sense? We're going to walk. We walked this way. We're going to walk that way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not going to get too far into that, but here's what I want us to understand. Remember, I'm trying to release his system. We have to understand him, but to understand him, we need to know his system above all the systems that oppose him.
Yeah.
So we need to understand him, but we need to understand his system. What I mean by that is I'm trying to get us off this lofty relational thing.
Yeah.
This like friend idea.
Yeah.
That's fine. I'm not against that, but yeah. I want you to know how he operates,
yes.
How he thinks, how he reigns, how he rules, and how he sees, or else you could be encountering something that's not him.
Yes.
That makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to know how, not just who he is,
yes.
But how he is, because when you have an encounter that opposes his system, then it might not have been him.
Yep.
Yeah.
So we need to be acquainted with his system.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to get into this as an example, like remind me, but I've got a very specific example about a religion that is, anyways, we'll get into it. But does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay. So there are blueprints that point to Yeshua and what he did when he came. Died and rose, but it also points to the rest of his story. Talking about Leviticus. Or, regardless of Leviticus, the whole Torah. Talking about his systems. Understanding his system, it always points to Yeshua.
Yeah.
But we also know that his death and resurrection was only the beginning, and we also know that his story is not done yet.
Yes.
So why would we think that this story would just stop at the cross?
Yeah.
This story is a whole story,
right.
All the way to Jubilee, of what's going to come through the rest of his whole story. And I'll get into why we think that way. I think I'm going to get into why we think that way. Oh, I'm right there. I'm going to talk about why we think that way. Does that make sense what I'm talking about? There are blueprints in the Bible.
Yeah.
We happen to be in the Old Testament. Don't neglect that we think that just the Old Testament points to Yeshua, meaning at the cross, and that's it. It, the Old Testament points to all of it.
Yeah.
That's good.
Oh.
It doesn't just it, and not just the five books, but the prophets.
Yeah.
There are prophecies that prophesy his death and resurrection.
Yeah.
But there are prophecies.
Yes.
That talk about what's going to happen later.
Right. Yeah.
So the Old Testament has to be relevant.
Yeah.
Does it make any sense to say we're going to get rid of the prophetic and the blueprint that pointed to what has already been real in my life and then just dismiss that there's more realness?
Yep.
If Yeshua is on every page of Leviticus, what I'm saying is not Yeshua just at the cross.
Yes.
I'm talking about Yeshua's second coming is in every page of the Leviticus.
Yes.
Yeah.
Does it make sense?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so that's why we need to understand who he is and his system, because when the system starts to play out, you're going to recognize it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Not a friendly encounter.
Yeah, that's good.
Your friendly encounter is not going to let you hear the trumpet sound.
Yeah.
Or relying on your intimate. I am not dismissing secret time, but your secret time is not going to expose his system in the cosmos.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good. Oh, never mind. Never mind. Okay. So does that? Okay. So we're in the blueprints.
Yep.
We're in the blueprints of what we know has happened, and we are also in the blueprints of what's going to happen.
Yep.
That's why I think there's so much stirring.
Yeah.
And we also know this because prophetically he told us on the journey, you're going to go back to the original intent. And you got to know the beginning to know the end. And so this all makes sense, but I'm just saying it educationally that it'll click. Here's why I believe we stop at the cross. Because we know that we have fallen trapped to the rapture theory.
Yeah.
Now, this may not be for everyone, but that false system cut out half the Bible.
Yes. Yeah.
It cut out half the Bible. Because from my understanding, what I was taught was the trumpet blows, we fly away, we're done.
Yeah.
I never heard what happens after.
Yep.
We're just done.
Yeah.
You cut out half the Bible.
Yeah.
So then when you go to operate under his system, you don't understand things like redemption. You don't understand Jubilee. You don't understand Shabbat. You won't understand Ezekiel. You won't understand 70 weeks.
Yeah.
You won't understand anything because you're going to miss his system because we've been taught that it was the cross. And then just at some point he comes back and we're good. You're never taught what happens when he comes back.
Yeah.
But Leviticus in the blueprint teaches us that. Does that make sense? What I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think that we've fallen trapped to that, so we cut out half the Bible, so we're ignorant that there's more to the story. So when we go back and we're trying to read the blueprint, you naturally see through the lens of the blueprint that it stops at the cross.
Mm-hmm.
You're not even thinking about what's to come because it has stopped for you. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Meaning we have broken off the greatest lie, but there's still a remnant of when he comes back, he'll take care of it all.
Yeah.
We're good to go.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
we still believe we're just going to fly around singing hymnals. It's just done. He'll take care of it. I don't have a role.
Mm-hmm.
So you are, what's the word? What's the word where you're, you're under a teaching. Thank you. I'm like, what is that word? You're indoctrinated. It's meaning that system is still playing.
Yeah.
Okay. If you're not hungry to understand that his story is not done, then you're still operating under a remnant of a system that says it's just done. And so you're not studying from that viewpoint.
Yeah.
That's why I don't think we see it as a blueprint, because he's already died and rose again.
Yes.
We're good to go.
Yeah.
And then it stops. And so we're not looking at this as a blueprint. We're actually looking at this as like, oh, this is just some teaching we have to do for 3 years. And he did away with all this stuff. And what does it matter? You can still be under that because you don't think that there's any relevancy to being holy, which we've already combated that, but I'm saying to finish out his story, this is relevant.
Yes.
You have to know what's common. You have to know what's holy and not holy, or you are going to miss the system that is coming. Okay? All right. So part of it is just us falling trapped because we just have, can I say this maybe? I don't know if anyone has had the kahunas to teach on eschatology. Eschatology is the study of end times. And if there was a study, it was just, it's in the year 2000, store up your beans. I don't know. He's coming. I don't know. I don't know. But it just, to me, I am not seeing a people hungry and understanding that we know deep down his story is not done.
Yeah.
But we are not supposed to be zombies just waiting for his story to finish out and us have no role, let me say, this is what I mean by disillusion. So the trumpet sounds and you're under the illusion.
Yeah.
Well, of course I'm going to be gone. So on the flip side is Like, I would rather err on the side of not thinking that, so I can actually be in tune to a sound.
Yeah.
Versus just assuming I'm going to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to get at this like deep level of recognition of how far of a gap there is for us to acknowledge that, so that we can operate in it to understand. Okay. All right. So, being indoctrinated, I believe we go blank.
Yeah.
Like we just, I'm saved.
Yeah.
I'm good. And I'm going to make it.
Yeah.
And what I'm going to make it means that at some point when he comes back and there's some kind of trumpet blast, I'm good to go. So we go blank when we read the blueprints.
Yeah.
We go blank when we read the prophets.
Yeah.
We go blank when we when Yeshua preaches.
Yeah.
Now I don't know if it's the what's that effect? The Mandela?
Mm-hmm.
Mandela effect?
Yeah.
There are some there are some things when you go to read the scripture, when you are awakened to reading the scripture, you're going to read something and be like, I have never read that before. Or I have never seen that before.
Mm-hmm.
Or that wasn't there before.
Yeah.
I mean, has that happened?
Yeah.
So that's what's happening to us. And this is a good thing, okay? So what's happening is you're not going blank. Right now, it's just blank. So then when we go to read the word, I don't mean it like a blank slate, like you're, you know, he can create on you. I mean, you're blank. So you don't have any system. So when you go to read it, you're lost. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So like I said before, I believe the Torah sets us up to understand his system, which in turn gives us understanding of his rule and reign in our lives today and what is to come. His ways are higher than our ways. Is that making sense?
Yeah.
We are reading in Leviticus about his system. So the heart of tonight, because we're going to get into some stuff, and there is kind of a warning with getting into some of the stuff, but I do, for the heart of tonight, if you get anything from tonight, I want us to begin to think different.
Mm-hmm.
Continue to exist. Let me see how to say this. I want you to think different. Continue to exit a system in order to adopt his.
Yeah.
That's the journey that we're on. That's the mind shift that I want us to have. If you get anything out of tonight, recognizing when that scripture says his ways are higher than our ways, his thoughts are higher than our thoughts, that you are in a process, whether you want to admit it or not, you are in a process of leaving many systems, many structures, the remnant of those systems, the remnant of those structures, and you are actively adopting his system. Okay? All right. So, something as simple, when I'm talking about exiting systems, tonight is all about how he sees time. So you wouldn't think when I say something as bold as like, you're exiting a system, you're like, yeah, we exited Egypt. But now they're at the bottom of Mount Sinai and he's teaching them how to see time. That's what I mean by systems. It may not be a huge religious structure you're walking out of, but it might be when you receive his instructions, you're having to redefine time. Let me ask you this. You guys seem kind of blank. Let me ask you guys a question. How many of you bought and sold something in the last 5 years thinking about Jubilee? Right? So you're learning a new way of seeing time that we have never experienced before in understanding how he sees. Again, this is his structure and his timing.
Yeah.
Or how he sees or how he functions. And so we're unaware of how he sees and how he functions, and we're learning how he sees. So in this Torah portion, we're going to talk about time. And how he sees time on earth and how he wants us to operate within that as well. Now, what's powerful, and I'm going to get into this at the end, is I believe one of the biggest ways that he wants time is how he gets you to recognize that he does own it all.
Yeah.
In order for you to acknowledge that he is the owner of all things, he uses time on purpose to reveal himself in his ownership. Mm-hmm. That's super powerful to understand how much we have to submit our time. Yeah. So when you're talking about like, oh, you know, I'm not really that far apart in delusion, or I'm not that far apart. It's how do you see time? Mm-hmm. So I'll ask this question. Let me just ask this question now. Well, first of all, let me say a couple things. There's an example in 2 Peter. One day is 1,000 years. So do we think in millenniums? Before, when it was 2025, we probably didn't. But now that we know it's 5785, we do.
Yeah.
So you begin to see things differently using his time, his calendar, his structure. And we've been on a journey of learning that by just even using the Hebraic calendar or recognizing that when does the day start? Mm-hmm. At night.
Yeah.
This is, it is, I don't feel like I'm doing a good job articulating what I'm trying to say, but even understanding that his time is not when you wake up in the morning at 6 a.m. is
yes.
a big deal for you.
Yes.
You
good.
Have to know his day, and you don't know it if you still believe that your day starts at 6 a.m. in the morning. I'm going to understand. You have to understand this through the lens of cleanliness. If a man is unclean until the day, you are missing it if you think your day starts at 6 a.m. Mm. and you are walking around making things common because you don't understand his time.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Everything matters.
Yeah.
Okay?
Okay.
All right. So, do we think in millenniums? I literally have my notes. Don't freak out. That's coming. But for tonight, we're just going to expand weeks to years.
Yes.
So he's taking us slow. But we do need to understand that he thinks in millennium. All right. But for tonight, we're going to be talking about Shabbat, and we're going to be talking about Jubilee. So I want us to think about this to see how we've grown. We've learned about Shabbat, and it was back in Exodus 20. I want you to think about where you were. And I think that this is significant because to me, we just learned about Shabbat not so long ago. And you've had this time to practice, and here we are where he's like, okay, now that you've gotten that, I'm going to expand this into years. So then you have to go back and look at how have I been doing with honoring Shabbat? Have I mocked it? Have I dismissed it? Is it not relevant? Do I still believe he is my Shabbat? So I can do this any day of the week I want? Right? Like what is happening in this time? Because now he's saying, I want to expand you into years. And we're still having a hard time trusting Friday to Saturday. Do we believe that double portion comes in on Friday? Business owners or workers, are we okay with not overtime? Do we believe that he's going to provide more if I choose to rest than to continue to work? How are we doing within a week?
Yeah.
Because he wants us to expand it into years.
Yeah.
So I want us to go back. What was that press when we were in Shabbat? We talked about trusting double to actually to be able to operate in his rest. Being set apart in a world. Think about this. We're being set apart in a world where Sunday is rest day, Saturday is not. Right? Saturday is overtime. Saturday is work day. Sunday might be off. How do you handle that in a world like that? What do you do when Chick-fil-A's on Sunday and we think Shabbat's on Saturday? Right? How do we change the system?
Some serious issues.
How do you handle overtime? How do you handle projects?
Yeah.
Even how do you handle your own home life? Well, it's the only day I have off.
Yeah.
So you're working yourself in a grind. Have you grown? Have you grown in honoring in that? Have you seen him? Here's another question. Have you seen him produce in the resting? And if the answer is no, then you've got to reflect on that because he said he will.
Yes.
He said he will. So then what's going on? Have you pushed back thinking you're the provider and savior of your home?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. or of your provision, right? I mean, a lot of this comes down to leaving our own system
right.
and entering into His, because we think we're great saviors, and you're just not.
Really good.
But it's hard.
Yeah.
I mean, I suck at it when the fruit shows it, but in the middle of control, I am the best thing my kids have got. Right? My sink, that I'm the best dishwasher. So it's hard in the moment to not think that way, but in the end, you really are a sucky provider, and you really are a sucky savior. And so it's the one day, let go and let Him. And how many of us are saying, that 24 does that make sense?
Yes.
No hours to 1 to 2 hours to 3 to 4 hours, but to get to 24 hours, because at some point it's going to be 365 days and more. Does that make sense?
Yep.
He always pressing
yeah.
In that, and why we need to get it and not dismiss the instruction, because He just keeps increasing. Okay? Mm-hmm. All right. So we get to expand to years. We're going to be working on 7 days being 7 years in this Torah portion. All right, so same thing. I'm going to ask questions with Shavuot. Shavuot, we learned, was in Leviticus 23, so it's just a couple chapters ago, but we started honoring Shavuot a couple years ago. So the question is how have we grown in our counting? That makes sense?
Yep.
Like, think about where He's taken us. Like, this is so good.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe you guys are smarter than me. I didn't know about Leviticus 25. 4 years ago when we started Shavuot counting meal. I had no idea. I had no idea. So did we question the counting? Why are we counting? Why are we doing that? What are we doing? Did we question the counting? How is this counting relevant to me? What is this whole counting of the Omer? Here's a question at the time. I hope it's not a question for now, but do we have as much enthusiasm for the counting of the Omer as we did the counting down to Christmas? If that's still a question, He's expanding us to years, guys. So, I mean, I know for me in the counting of the Omer, I even lost track. Remember, I was like, well, wait a minute, what week are we on? And He's like, you better know what Shemitah you're in, because Jubilee's coming, and I can't even keep track of 49 days. I need to have a little journey map and stickers. You guys were such babies. Ellen printed out a journey map with stickers, and I still lost track. And He's saying that there are some promises that are coming on day 50, and I don't even know how to count out to Shavuot.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yes.
Is it mundane in the counting? Yeah. What number are we on?
Come on.
Are we intentional to know that we are preparing for something?
Yeah.
We have practice every single year. You are preparing for Shavuot. We talked about preparation this last year. Did any of us connect that we would be preparing for something as little as a day, and He's going to have us learn how to prepare, how to count for 50 years?
Yeah.
All right. Have you grown? Because we are now going to move from weeks to years with Jubilee. All right. It's beautiful what He's walking us through. We have no idea. So when I'm talking about that stuff, that's what I mean by talk about missing the trumpet blast or having your lamp ready.
Yeah.
There are some people that have no idea what the counting of the Omer is and will mock that it has nothing to do with anything that's going on. And I'm over here thinking, we have to practice.
Yeah.
And some people are saying there's no need for that.
Yeah.
Well, you guys, expanding the counting of the Omer turns into Jubilee. Did you guys catch that scripture?
Yep.
It's announced on the 10th day of Atonement.
Yeah.
It's on Atonement. There is nothing that is just, that's a cute little poem. He is so meticulous. The year of Jubilee is blasted on the Day of Atonement. Is there a trumpet horn on the Day of Atonement? Nope. Rosh Hashanah there is. Day of Atonement happens on Jubilee. It is absolutely, I mean, talk about your ears having to be in tune to a sound and practicing. Is this making sense?
Yeah.
This is so, I mean, like I said, I am not getting into eschatology, but I can tell you right now, I'm like 99.99.99 100% sure that when all slaves are free and your debt's been paid, it's probably going to happen on the Day of Atonement. And if it happened once, it's going to happen again.
Yeah. Come on.
All right. You guys okay?
Yeah.
All right. So now what I want to do is kind of just break down the actual Torah portion, kind of line for line. We're doing okay.
You're good.
All right. Here's what I want to say. I want to release your ears to what the word of the Lord is saying. Because as I go through this, it's going to be very practical. You've all read it. And it's going to make a lot of earthly sense in the sense of it being practical. But I want your ears to hear what the word of the Lord is trying to say.
Okay?
Okay. All right. So the word I used was, I might be saying that wrong, Shemitah, I think. It's called the Shabbatot. It's the cluster of 7 years. Is what that word is. And so the Torah portion takes us through for 6 years, just like in the week. For 6 days, you can sow, prune, gather. In the sixth year, you're going to have to collect double, because in the seventh year, you're not allowed to do any of that. So that you can rest, so that the land can rest. There's very, very practical. I mean, not even getting into the spiritual. I am not a farmer, but what I do know is that there is absolutely need for land to rest for it to produce.
Yeah.
That is part of his system. The problem is that we don't operate in his system,
right.
So we see the deterioration of ourselves, our bodies, why we're deteriorating, why our land is deteriorating, because we're not operating in his system and he does know better. Okay? All right. Every 7 years is what they would call a sabbatical year. It's the year of rest for the land. No sowing, no pruning. You can't reap, which reap means to cut and gather what grows by itself during the harvest. You cannot gather the fruit. There will be increase and enough food. You can eat it, but you can't store it. Basically, what's happening is whatever the land produces on its own, now, without human aid, was property of all. So it's not yours anymore in that seventh year. And whatever is produced in excess can be eaten, because it was left to be eaten, but it can't be stored and it can't be gathered. And you can't till or work the land, but the land will just produce it on its own. Okay?
Okay.
All right. And then we talked about this, and it comes later on in the scriptures, but this means that they had to trust for multiple years.
Yeah.
Because they worked the sixth year, which I guess depending on how you look at it, they worked the sixth year, so they obviously are trusting that there's going to be a harvest for the sixth year, but double portion for the seventh year, but they were not sowing in the seventh year. So that means in that eighth year, or the first year of the next cycle, they're still having to eat off of the old harvest of the sixth year because they didn't sow anything, so really not till the ninth year did they get fruit.
Yeah.
So think about that though when he breaks this down for your week. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So think about that where you are collecting double, trusting what has happened throughout the week to provide for your Shabbat. But then if you're not working on Shabbat, you didn't receive anything on Sunday. So you're still, does that make sense?
Yeah.
So you're still looking at Monday off of what you did. You gotta see it through his times, not the way the business world has said, thank God it's Friday, right? Or Monday morning blues. It's not, we're operating in it that, by doing that. Like there are some things we can do as a family that can break this down.
Amen.
Right?
Yeah.
Shift it.
Yeah.
What do you need to do to make Sunday morning the first day? Right? What are some of those things to start seeing through the lens of his system so we don't miss it? Okay? All right. Now we go into the next part of the Torah portion, which is Jubilee, which is actually the Hebrew word Yovel. All right? So you count off 7 cycles of the Shemitahs, which is what we just talked about. So basically it happens every 50 years. So you have seven cycles of seven, 49, then another year, you have Jubilee, which is 50. We know this with the counting of the Omer, it's just days have turned into years. Okay? There's a trumpet blast on the 10th day of the seventh month, which happens to be what feast? Yom Kippur. You are to make it holy. This is the year Jubilee. You are to make it holy. You're to proclaim liberty to all the land. Yvonne sent a picture of the Liberty Bell. That, what is on our Liberty Bell that says that scripture, it comes from this Torah portion. I don't know if you guys know this or not, but the Founding Fathers actually talked about adopting Hebrew as our foundational language. Isn't that crazy? Can you imagine if that was our homeland language? All right. He says that this will be a jubilee to you, which is Yovel. The word actually means, which, oh my gosh, the word actually means ram's horn or trumpet. Jubilee means celebration or anniversary of an event after 50 years of rain or activity. So the jubilee is an anniversary of an event after 50 years of rain or an activity. The scripture says you are to return to your property and your family. It's another Shabbat year. So you have 49 year, the 49th year is a Shabbat year. Then you add another one. So every 50 years, now you're trusting him for like four.
Yeah.
Because you have the 48th year, nothing on the 49th, nothing on the 50th. Right? So, and then even after that, it might take 2 years. Anyways, there's a long time because it adds a year in trusting him. It says no sowing, no reaping or gathering. It's treating it just like a Shabbat year, and you can eat of the increase just like the Shabbat year. So everything is the same for that year of Jubilee. But there's special laws for this year. So we're going to go through all of those until the end of, till verse 38. You guys still okay?
Yeah.
All right, so these special laws are for Yovel. I hope I'm going to go through these accurately. This is how I just read it, and this is just how I wrote it down. Selling and buying are to be held with integrity. You are not to wrong or cheat one another. Sales were based on poverty, not advancement. Kinsman Redeemer may provide. This is where we get the story of Boaz. You guys remember Naomi's kinsman did not want to buy the land because that meant he would have Ruth, so he said no, so Boaz became a kinsman redeemer. It's super important for us to understand this in Jubilee that there is a kinsman redeemer, because who is our kinsman redeemer? Yeshua. Okay, sale prices were based on Yovel timeline. That's what I meant by buying and selling and seeing in the lens of how he sees time. Number of years of crops. It wasn't based on January to December or 30-year mortgages. Again, this is a system. This is about seeing through his system. There is a promise that living securely in the land is coming under his system. You will eat your fill and be safe. Abundance in the sixth year to provide 2 to 4 years. All sales of the land were returned to the original owner. This is again in the Yovel year. So all sales of the land were returned to the original owner, which meant that there was no permanent sales, because the land is his.
That's good.
I want you guys to have ears to hear what the Lord is saying.
Yeah.
Let me say something to maybe help the Spirit get through.
Okay.
What if you are the land? So all sales of the land were returned to the original owner. Nothing is permanent.
Yeah.
If you have had out of poverty to sell yourself to get out of something, there's something in Jubilee where the kinsman redeemer has the ability to buy you back. Because the sale of yourself is not permanent because of redemption.
Yeah.
Okay?
That's good.
Before 49 years,
I can't handle it.
Before 49 years, a kinsman redeemer can buy it back. You don't have to wait because a kinsman redeemer can do it. Now, there is a cost. It's not like, hey, sorry, I'm back. My big brother's in town.
Right.
Enemy. Do you guys hear what I'm saying?
Yes.
My big brother's in town. Sorry, I sold myself. But you get he had to pay. They have to pay
right.
to get it back. It's not like, hey, I'm back now.
Yeah.
All right. Except for in Jubilee. All right. All right. Couple exceptions is. You guys, I can't. I except for inside the walled city. I don't know. Anyways, there's an exception to all this if you're inside the walled city. That is permanent. Oh my gosh. Okay. Anyways, there's an exception for inside the walled city. This was based on agriculture and homes on an agricultural land. So can be redeemed. So if the home was in a walled city, it can be redeemed only within the first year, but after that it became a permanent sale. Including Jubilee. All right. The other thing is that there's a Levite clause. You guys remember the Levites, they don't get an inheritance. Yeah. The land is their inheritance. So there's a Levite clause that in the city, they're not held to the 1 year, but anytime they can redeem that back, as well as Jubilee. Their houses in the city are like the land for everyone else. They don't abide by the walled city exception. Is that making sense?
Mm-hmm.
The Levites are also never to sell their land. That is permanent inheritance for them as priests. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
The Levite clause, okay. I kind of wrote that weird. But their houses in the city are like the land for everyone else. So they abide by that. They don't have to abide by the walled city
mm-hmm.
exception. All right. Then the next, after all the special laws for Jubilee, then there's a, kind of a set of some laws that I believe set us up for the next Torah portion. I really wish we were getting into the next Torah portion because it's all about slavery. And reversing slavery. But before we get into slavery, I feel like this is a setup for the next Torah portion. You are to uphold a brother who becomes poor. He may live with you like an outsider. Take no excessive interest from him if he borrows, and don't lend him money for interest. Meaning if he offers to pay interest, do not take excessive interest from him, and you can't lend him money with interest, and you cannot sell food for profit. Basically, you are not to make money off of your brother who is poor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's going to set us up into the next verses of slavery. Mm. Okay?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
All right. Couple things I want to tap into, which Eric already did and sent us into, and then I'm going to talk about where we are, and then I have a word for everybody. Are you guys okay?
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, this is good.
Okay. All right. Obviously, most of us were hit by Leviticus 25:23. The land is not to be sold permanently because the land is mine.
Yeah.
For you are only temporary residents, strangers,
yes.
and settlers, sojourners, together with me.
Mm-hmm.
That is the key.
Yes.
With me.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't that an interesting?
Mm-hmm.
With me. All right, so let's break this down. Stranger is a temporary inhabitant, a newcomer, lacking inherited rights, foreigners. It does come from a word that means abide, dwell, remain, inhabit. Temporary dwell, seek hospitality with, to assemble oneself, stand in awe. That's the root of being a stranger. Then you have also the word sojourner.
Sojourner.
That word is pretty much the same thing as stranger, but it means stranger, but the root of it's a little bit different. It means to dwell, remain, sit, abide, sit down, to be set, to remain, stay, to dwell, have one's abode, to set, cause to sit, abide, to marry, to be inhabited. So there's a lot with these words. To make dwell. And then the word with me literally just means by me, upon me, mine, from, with, toward, beside, unto. So again, just breaking this down, understanding that he's telling It's an interesting what's happening. I have a word for us in this, but it's interesting to me because up until this point, his people have been his chosen people and have talked about the mixed multitude or foreigners and sojourners. And then he tells his own people, you are also strangers and sojourners with me. So, and there is something about this Torah portion that does, you see his character level the playing field. Let me try to give an example. Every 7 years, no matter how well off you were doing, you all became poor. Does that make sense? Everyone, especially in the year of Jubilee, I know this word's kind of political, but it's a great reset. You know, it was a way for him to not allow his people to create a monopoly. He has a system on how he functions, his economics. Okay? So there's an aspect where he's telling his people that you are also foreigners. You know, because he always is talking about how, like, remember, I pulled you out of Egypt.
Yeah.
So there's an aspect of reminding them, but he says, with me. I just think that that's super powerful because he's talking to his chosen people. And it's like he's making all of his, just like last week, we all have one standard. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just thought that was interesting because he tells them that they are essentially strangers. Okay. So that scripture is being highlighted. Everything that Eric said is because, and like I said earlier, he's using time to be able to release an aspect of his character that he is the owner of it all.
Yes.
You are my chosen people. Don't forget that in me or with me, you are also foreign.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe I'm gonna go to the word. No, I'm not. I'll get there. This is a word for us because he's bringing playing field is the word that's coming to my mind, or another word would be balance. He's bringing an addition to a word that we've carried that I believe he has for us. And I believe he was also doing that for his people at this time when he's telling them that. Basically remembering, this is how you treat your brother. This is how you operate. This is, you know, position yourself always for redemption, because he's reminding them, I'm the owner of you. I'm the owner of all of this. Mm-hmm. Okay. So he's using time to be able to expose how he's the owner of all things. Because if you think about how mundane even things have gotten when we say a prayer before we eat.
Yeah.
You know, do we think I provided for that food? I'm the one that went to the grocery store. I'm the one that paid the bills. I'm the one that got the money. I'm the one that cooked it. I'm the one. Versus really understanding, without him, there is nothing.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about, I don't even know how to say that, but he is the owner, and he is the provider, and always remembering that, I think, is a huge part of this Torah portion. Okay, so I want to go through this a little bit, and then I'm going to bring a word, and then I think I'll be done. Where are we is the question that I have. We talked about this a little bit on Voxer, but I just want to make sure that we have this, because I just think that this is good training for us to start to see through his system. Here's a warning, though. Do not leave here and get fixated on calculations, times, looking up resources, and trying to figure out when he's coming back. He has us on a journey. You barely know how to handle Shabbat. When you can rest on Shabbat and fully trust and go through 49 years and trust him for, then maybe he'll give us, is that okay for me to say that?
Yeah.
I want to give us hunger for what's happening in the Torah portion, but not so much hunger that we start running in front of the king and doing things that we shouldn't be doing.
Yes.
But we do need to know what he's doing in this Torah portion.
Yeah.
Because he is absolutely unlocking mysteries. And I do believe if we continue in the holiness code, I have told you guys before, he is absolutely going to drop the mysteries in our hands, in our laps, in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
He
that is going to happen. Okay? But we've got to stay on the journey. We've got to stay on the path. All right, so the sabbatical years are marked. The next Shabbat year is going to be 5789. So the last Shabbat year was 5782, which means in 2028, 2029 will be our next Shabbat Shemitah, our next year. So if you are having a hard time on Fridays and Saturdays, we have till 28, 29 to understand. Now, you guys understand when I'm, because we're going to get to Q&A. Please do not ask me, so what do we do, just sit in our houses for a year? I don't know. Don't ask that question. We don't have, unless you guys have farmland, I'm not sure. You can't prune vegetables in your fridge, they've already been pruned. I don't know what we're supposed to do. I don't know. But what I do know is he wants us to see through his system. So we have to begin to be aware, we have to acknowledge, and we need to understand. It's going to help us economically, it's going to help us politically, it's going to help us with vision, it's going to help us with prophecy, it's going to help us see his ways, not our ways. But I do not want questions that are so earthly minded, because I just don't, well, here's what I will say. They're not even honoring Jubilee right now. They haven't since Babylonian. We don't really even have any record of the Jews and Hebrews ever acknowledging Jubilee. We don't have, there's a little bit of it in Nehemiah, but there's not a whole lot of example for us in the scripture of them even following this. I think that that's significant for what's to come, because it's in there for a reason, and if it's never been honored, it's going to be.
Yeah.
So we don't have a whole lot of example, and we do not know exactly when the Jubilee years are, because they haven't necessarily been counted, but I'll get into that when I get into Jubilee. But we do know the Shabbat years. Does that make sense? Okay. So the new cycle, this is interesting. So the new cycle starts 5790, which is 2029-2030. You guys know that we calculate our ministry's wineskin. Right? Our wineskin shifts in 2030. So I just find that interesting in following his times and seasons, that the beginning of our ministry 12 wineskins ago. I mean, we've been saying wineskin, but you could say it as a Shabbat or a Shemitah. Mm-hmm. We've just been saying the word wineskin because we've said wineskin 7 years. But that's essentially what's been happening, and we've been following that, and we shifted essentially at the beginning of a new cycle. Anyways, just something to think about. All right. So now you've got Jubilee, which is every 50 years. This has not been observed for at least 2 millennia. And part of the reason why they say that it hasn't is because the law was when they were in the promised land, and all 12 tribes had to be living in order to function in it, but all 12 tribes have not been living in the land. Okay. Oh my gosh, there's a lot. Do you guys understand why I would say, but it's probably going to happen? Because at some point, the 12 tribes are coming back.
Yes.
So then it would... Okay. All right. All right. There are, this is, okay, let me see if I want to read this. All right. I pretty much already said this. I'll just read what I said. There are predictions that have used prophecies with the scripture that can date the Jubilees that should have been observed. So it is out there. Granted, this is getting into the study of end times. We're going to go there. I do believe we are going to go there. But for now, he's just wanting us to begin seeing his system. Tuning into his ways as we follow him on his journey. He's leading us, and he will continue to lead us. We do not want to go ahead of our king. We just learned to honor the weekly Shabbat. We don't need any old systems influencing us as to what the future holds.
Yeah.
That's why I believe that there's a warning. I don't want any remnant of an old system infiltrating what the future holds. Yeah. So does that make sense?
Yeah.
Just know that it's more than blank. Like, that's where he has us. Just know that there is a story. The scripture talks about it, and we have cut out half the Bible, and he's unlocking that other half to us, and it's going to be an exciting journey, and it's not blank. It doesn't just come and we fly away and we're done. There is a lot, and we have a huge role in it. But he's still stripping us of how we live today, right? Yes. Let alone how we're going to live in the future. Stay in today.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because you're hungry for the future.
Yeah.
Don't bypass today to try to get to the future.
Yes.
Because then you'll just be back in religion. Does that make sense?
Yes.
We're going to get to the future, but you're going to go there by going through today, not getting around today to focus later.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yep.
All right. Here's an example. When you look this up, the Catholic Church says that the year of Jubilee is right now. 2025, and it began on Christmas Eve of 2024, and it will end on January 6th of 2026.
Wow.
So don't just Google Jubilee. Because I would assume, if I just very simply do this, I would assume Jubilee would have to be at least after a Shabbat year. 2025 is in the middle of a cycle, so that doesn't work, right? Okay. All right. Here's the big picture. Here's a couple takeaways. Here's the big picture. He is the owner. Land, people, food, all of it. Big picture, how he counts. It's how he gets us to acknowledge that he is the owner is through time, cycles, and calendar. He is telling us how to treat the poor. He's giving us instructions on how to have integrity and honor. So when you have a question of why would I honor Shabbat, maybe he's teaching you how to have integrity and how to handle the poor. They're obviously connected because his ownership over your life comes through the calendar, comes through the cycles, comes through the times. It's interesting to me, the people who dismiss his times and his calendar and his seasons are the ones that will dismiss humanity as a whole. They're connected.
Yep.
Because if you submit to the times, then you submit he says, be fearful of me. Treat your brother a certain way because I am Adonai, your God.
Yeah.
So it's got to be connected. Counting by his times, his seasons, and his calendars have to teach you how to treat people. Is that making sense?
Yeah.
Meaning, think about the world. People at Christmas are horrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we're not honoring his seasons and his times.
Yeah.
All right. It brings humility to his people. He doesn't want a monopoly.
Yeah.
He has a system with a built-in reset. This is powerful.
Yeah.
Any of you guys want a reset?
Yes.
All right, spiritually.
Yes.
All right, spiritually, big picture. I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to say this. Okay, I'm going to say it. On a spiritual level, which is what I was praying that your ears would hear, some of the big pictures. I want you to look at everything I just said through the lens of replacement theology. If we had to take over for a time, would he not honor his people? I mean, in the book of Revelations, it talks about the 12 tribes. It doesn't talk about Sean and Logan. I mean, we're going to be a part of it because we're grafted in. But think about this through the concept of replacement theology. Replacement theology said Jews are out, church is in, and it's all ours, and you are done.
Yep.
And yet we want to claim redemption and not think that the year of Jubilee isn't going to be for his people. Because what happens when it says go back to your land and it all has to be restored to its rightful owner?
Yep.
And you are a foreigner and a sojourner. Yep. With him. We're grafted in, don't get me wrong, but I'm just saying, understand this through what has happened. Replacement theology took Leviticus 25 and just shred it to pieces. And what's so crazy is the entitlement to say it's all mine and not understand that I would want to be redeemed. I would want a great reset. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
All right. Anti-Semitism is against the Bible. But it's also half the Bible of what's going to come in the future. All right. Anyways. There is, spiritually, there's redemption for you. Debts are canceled. You have a kinsman redeemer. Accounts are settled. There's celebration. There's restoration. It's not permanent. Not the celebration. I'm saying, like, what has happened in your life is not permanent. Slaves are set free, which is going to be next week. So that's the big picture on the spiritual side that we get to glean from this Torah portion. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, so here is a word. Are you guys still okay?
Yeah.
All right. This is the word I know that this is going to make sense, but I'm hoping that I'm going to be able to articulate it. But Yahweh has taken us through words over our family. And one of the first things he had to do to wake us up was he had to expose the renter in you, right? In us. He had to expose the renter and said, you need to become an owner, right? And in learning how to become an owner, we learned our identity. We learned that we are kings and priests. We are sons, right? We got rid of renter. Renter taught us that you're going to escape. You get to get out of it. You get to be complacent. It's not mine. Who cares? Doesn't matter. And it's short term. Right? That was renter. So he says, you are not to be a renter. You are to be an owner. So now I'm going to go through what he said to be an owner. Instead of escape and get out of it, he wants you to be present. He wants you to be aware. He wants you to say, it's mine. I have to care. It matters now.
Yeah.
It's long term.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This is a good word.
Yeah. Yeah.
But now he wants you to understand that if you, I believe that the word for us is that now that you know that you're an owner, don't forget who owns you.
Yes.
Okay? So part of ownership is long term, but with depreciation. So I'm going to release an aspect that I'm hoping will make sense. Lease to own or lease to release. When you lease something, these are the words that come along with it. You have to uphold standards. You would say it's ours.
Yeah.
I get to care.
Yeah.
Hands wide open in all matters. Long term with upgrades. Does this make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Here's some of the Google things that popped up when I said what happens when you're a leasee, I think is what they called it. It says you're in a transitional phase with elements of both renter and owner. You have to make deliberate choices, be intentional, purpose, and forward movement. This is the kicker. This is the big one. Investment. This one's gonna get me. Because I am personally in the thick of this Torah portion this week, coming home. Investment, even if the end goal hasn't fully materialized. So he is shifting us. You are not to be a renter, but you are not to operate as a sole owner.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
you are to really lease good. To own.
Okay.
Or lease to release. Okay?
Yep.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So I want to give an analogy. I hope you'll have to fill in if I don't do this right, because I don't know if I've got all the contract stuff. But when you... When you rent a home or you rent a car, you don't really care because it's not yours. When you own it, you can get neurotic, obsessive, self-dependent. It's all mine. It's up to me. What this word and what this Torah portion is doing is saying you are to own and care for what you have as if you're in a contract. But you are under contract that ultimately owns what you're leasing. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So, am I saying that right? Like with a car, like the car analogy. So, like when you're leasing a car, you're under contract that it is yours. So you're caring for it like it's yours, because at the end of the terms, you don't know if you're going to keep it or give it back. So because you don't know what you're going to do, you have to make deliberate choices because it's yours, but you are under contract.
Yeah.
So you're in a contract, but you are under contract.
Yeah.
And at the end of that time, it can either go back and be released or it can stay and be yours.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
Okay. I just have in here that earth is ours, but he gave it to us. So we steward it, but we have to steward it the way he does, because we're under contract, because it's ultimately his, which is why he's saying you're a foreigner with me, because we're in contract with him. That would be like the dealership saying you are now in contract with me and taking care of something. So you have aspects of both renter and owner. And I believe that that's what he's giving to us as a family, because I can see that we could pendulum swing.
Yeah.
We've left being a renter, escape theology, who cares, it's not ours, and then pendulum swing to the other side and say, it's all mine, it's all up to me, I have to do it,
yeah.
And now all of a sudden you're not recognizing that there is someone that owns you.
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah.
All right. I think that's all I have for that. So why does this matter? Like, why is this word coming? Why does this matter? This life is practice daily to walk worthy of the call and fulfill our assignment while on this earth. We get to remember the cosmos and live it out to determine our future in the cosmos. So here's the question. Here's what I want to say. Do you have all the answers to where your home will be in the end times? No. So we're learning, which is why you're leasing. Make sense?
Yeah.
If you fall under it's all mine, or you're an owner, and his system comes and something happens, you could miss his system, because you're saying, but I was told to steward this land.
Mm-hmm.
Flagstaff. We're all called to Flagstaff. We could become so attached that I am the sole owner of Flagstaff. So when a system comes, and let's say there's a mass exodus, we won't understand that it was never ours to begin with. It was his.
Yeah.
We were just leasing. We may lease to release, or we may release to own. Because we don't know our home. We don't know what it means when he says you're a foreigner with me. None of us have the answers to end times. We don't know what this actually looks like. And because of that, you're leasing until.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because if you rent, now all of a sudden, who cares? I can leave. But if you own, you could get so gridlocked of this is all mine, and then a system comes and you miss it.
Yeah.
So we have to have a hands wide open mentality that it absolutely does matter, but it's ours, not mine. And my hands are wide open to what matters.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? As we learn our role and walk in ownership, let us always walk like a stranger and sojourner with him.
Yeah.
Let us not be renters nor sole owners, but lessees, having all authority of a contract, but under contract nonetheless. Which I would think that Yeshua is our perfect example.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he did nothing. I mean, that guy rose from the dead. He had all the authority, and yet always said, I don't do anything I don't see my father doing.
Yep.
So he was completely under the sovereignty of his father, and at the same time was fully son, fully king, fully priest.
Yep.
And that's what he's calling us to do. So I want us to understand that he's bringing some balance to this word of redemption and restoration, and how to operate in his times, and understanding redemption, understanding even practically what happens when you own something and 50 years later the rightful owner comes back and says,
yeah,
I've been set free. Mm-hmm. Or the other way around. The word that was coming to me, or what I've been in this week even thinking about coming across the country, is family returns home. Okay, well, if you return home, then someone has to be home. So there's a returning and there is a home to return to.
Yeah.
What does all that mean in restoration and in redemption? So you got to look at it from the lens of both sides, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, and because we don't know, that's why we're leasing with our hands wide open.
Yeah.
Man, there's something about this Torah portion and everything that was just released that is exciting to me in a new way than what we've experienced in Leviticus. I feel like this is somewhat of a, not a departure, but maybe an even more of an aerial view of how Yahweh operates, right? Like she said, it went from like conduct to a calendar. So it's like a totally, it's like we're turning a quarter to a totally different thing. I just wanted to recap some of the things Mom talked about. He is the way, not a label.
Oh, a label. That was way better than what I said. I said slap a name on it. Yeah.
And that's powerful because, it, and one of the reasons why it's encouraging to me is because it's almost what I feel when I hear this Torah portion is that there's blueprints, there's protocols, there's systems. Like Yahweh is systematic.
Yeah.
And it's very, and it's simple if you are on the right frequency and you can obey his instructions. He opens the door to totally transform how we operate. One of the things that I'm just thinking about is she said we have to know how Yahweh is, not just who he is, but we have to know how he is, which means we have to know how he operates. I think one of the big problems that we have in general, even just looking back at the process we've gone through, is that we can't understand how he is because for probably, I would say, I'll go out on a limb and say for 95% of the time, we don't even know why we do what we do. Like, we don't even know why we do the things we do. So why would we, how would we begin to understand why Yahweh does the things he does or how he operates if we don't understand why we're operating, which is why as a family, we went through a process of saying, why do we do Christmas? Why do we have Easter? Why do we do these things? When she was talking about time, it's interesting because I was looking up while she was talking about that. When did the concept of a work week begin? Because we all do work weeks, right? Well, if we don't ask the question of why, I mean, work weeks weren't the disciples weren't like doing their discipleship stuff on the weekend because they had a work week, right? So it's like, when did that start? Why do we have a work week? And it's interesting. It said it started with the Industrial Revolution. They worked 6 days a week, and then they had Sunday off because we know of what Constantine did. They had Sunday off, right? But then it's interesting, in the early 20th century, in 1908, there was a cotton mill in New England that gave Saturdays off because they actually had Jewish employees and they wanted to acknowledge the Jewish employees and gave them Saturdays off. So we all have been enjoying Saturdays off because of our ancestors that we now know about, right? But we don't have any clue that that's why we had Saturdays off, because of Shabbat, right? So it's like, and then Henry Ford came and said, well, now I'm going to give you a 40-day work week. So it just makes you think, who is governing our concept of time?
Yeah.
Is it Yahweh or is it Henry Ford? Right? Seriously, because all of us, our entire adult lives, we have worked a 40-day work week for the most part.
Yeah.
I mean, a 40-hour work week.
I mean, it feels like 40
right,
days.
Yeah. Right, but that just goes to show you, like, we don't even know. I never knew this stuff. I never thought to even look it up because we're so ingrained in the system that is just the way it is. Right? So how are we going to begin to understand his systems if we don't even understand why we do what we do? Like, why do we have Saturdays off? I never knew that. That's where it started in 1908. Right? But it's interesting because another thing she said was basically the holiness code gives you the foundation to discern his system when it comes. It's like a counterintuitive connection that his holiness code would give you ears to hear and eyes to see his system when it actually comes or as it operates. Our understanding of time is a byproduct of a worldly system. Holiness automatically shifts your understanding of time and transforms you into another dimension. If you think about how the people were delivered out of Egypt, it was a physical relocation of people from one place to another place. And in Exodus, it talks about by his right hand or by the strength of his right hand, right? So there's this very physical element of Yahweh's strength taking people and moving them from one location to another. And that was the Exodus or the rescue from bondage, right? But then we move into what she was talking about. And now you have not his physical strength or his arm moving people from one place to another place. His calendar literally transforms you into another dimension. Like, if you think about a dimension, it's the shape and the form of something according to specific metrics. So, like, just take the Gregorian calendar, right? The 40-day or the 40-hour work week. We have these metrics, and then your life takes a shape and a form according to these things.
Yeah.
Right? The Gregorian calendar. Your life takes a shape and a form according to these metrics. Well, Yahweh has his Hebrew calendar, his timing, his cycles, his 70 cycles, his 7 days, all these things. His metrics will literally cause you to take a different shape and a different form if you live your life according to those metrics. So he literally, by his timing, transforms you into another dimension. And it's crazy to me because it's just systematic. He's like, just operate according to my calendar and my time.
Well, another dimension produces.
Yeah.
You know? It's not like he's saying, here's a different dimension, and I want you to work 7 days a week.
Yeah, and it's, right?
It's more freedom and more production.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like she said, his ways are greater than our ways, and it gets me excited. Every Torah portion gets us excited and fired up. This one feels different to me because it's unlocking the issue of time. But it's not, to me, this message isn't being received regarding time in a way that's confusing. Not saying that. Like, I would think if you were to talk, up until this point, for me personally, God's timing and God's calendar has been a difficult subject to understand in my mind. I listen to Baum talk about the calendar and the timing, and I'm amazed that she can just line things out and connect dots and all these things. I've always been amazed about that, and it's been difficult for me. But something about tonight, is there's something simple about him unlocking his time, and your obedience to that will literally, I don't need to know what's going to materialize in the future because I'm leasing. If I just own my obedience to his time, even though I don't know what's going to materialize, I will literally change into another dimension in how my life takes shape simply by honoring Pesach and Shavuot and not Easter and Christmas, which is crazy because we've been doing that, and it's almost like what Yahweh's been doing is, I'm going to have you be obedient to this according to my calendar, and our future has started to take shape. Because how many times have we said, looking back, we can't believe that we're in this place and this is how it started. Little things. And it's funny to me, as you were preaching, it makes me think of Yahweh hearing us pray, we want the original intent, right? And we're like thinking it's this grand thing, and he's like, okay, so we're I can see him being like,
okay,
let's set all that aside, we're gonna count. Everything you're saying sounds very like, you know, it's got gravitas. It's like, we're going to conquer the world. He's like, just set that aside. Count to 10. Like, but I feel like that's how simple it is. And I can look back on our walk as a family, and we've done those simple things when most people would be like, that's stupid. Why are you doing that?
Like the
stickers. What are you doing over there? We're counting. We're learning how to count. We're learning how to count. We're being willing to say we don't know and be obedient to him. And up until this point, we haven't understood that We're being obedient so he can change our shape and our form literally to a dimension that other people don't recognize.
Yep.
So I'm excited about whatever in the Holy Spirit was riding on every word released tonight, and whatever structure, I believe she's preaching, the Holy Spirit's riding on those words, and structures are being built. Like, I can feel it, and I'm excited about it, even though I have no clue what that means or what that looks like. All I have to do is focus on, he has a system of time, and we have to just be obedient to that and do our best to be familiar with that. Because to me, I would be the person that would be like, I just don't get it. I can't keep track of all the, on the 10th day of the 7th month of the, I can't keep track of all that stuff, right? I could say that. But to me, this is bringing like an encouragement in a greater way, if that makes any sense. So yeah, I think it's something to be excited about, because it just seems like a simplified way of stepping into his system. So
you're talking dangerous.
Yeah, I'm sure she's like seeing things that I'm not seeing, as I'm saying how encouraging this is.
You're talking about dimensions of time and structures in the future. I'm like,
yeah.
But at the end of the day, what he's saying is numbers matter.
Yes.
Numbers matter before, they matter now, and mm-hmm. they're gonna matter when they come. Yep. And it should awaken you and blow your mind. Because I always go back to when I, you know, like I said, I've woken up a lot in my life, but when I woke up to the scriptures being real, was that stinking 40 days.
Mm-hmm.
That was real. That from death to resurrection to walking the earth to that time frame was that 40 days, and then waiting in Jerusalem, you know, until Shavuot came. Waking up to that and recognizing how real that was, and then knowing that every date that something happened was the exact date before. There's just nothing in the Bible that, like I said, that's just a lofty poem. And it's going to matter for us to understand these numbers, because when we do get into biblical prophecy, there's a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
That was really good.
Amen.
Our Shabbat, our ministry Shabbat year, almost lines up with the actual Hebrew Shabbat year.
It's off. That's the first day of the next cycle.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So, this is super fun. I really enjoyed tonight. Yahweh is systematic. That's good. I'm not broken. Just have to figure out where it works. There's two things that Mom and Dad spoke tonight. Yahweh is systematic, and then Mom's whole sermon tonight is trust in his system. Super cool. She also said, the land is his, and the land is part of his system. So that was cool too. I was thinking when I was reading this Torah portion, like, what if you weren't a farmer? What if you were a fisherman? Does that mean like you're excluded from this? I don't farm, so I don't have a Shabbat here. Or I'm a tax collector, so this doesn't apply to me. Like, provision was their job. The land was their job. Like, that's what it was. It was their job. It's where they fed their family. It's where they sold their produce. It was their livelihood. And so, I mean, I was even talking with Eric earlier this week about, like imagine that sixth year, and you're supposed to get a triple portion to last you 3 years. And he's like, you're not going to do anything in the seventh year. And guess what? Your eighth year there is you're still not going to have anything, because that's the year you're going to be working again. So so I'm just thinking in my head, like, the sixth year, I'm like, oh my God, I hope this is enough. but it's cool, because their jobs, their land was part of his system. So there had to be a trust in the system, yeah. Right? So that just makes me think, like, if the fisherman back then had to still apply this to his life, then I should have to apply this to my life with my job and what provides for me and my family. And I start thinking, have I made... So if my job's provision for my family, and I have to think through, like, is my... Like, I'm not a farmer. I sell medical equipment to respiratory patients. Like, that's what I do. Like, I manage a center that does that. So how do I make that real? It's like, well, it's talking about the land, like his provision. And so I'm thinking, is my job part of his system? Mom talked about our own free will and being under his authority, but our will under his will. And so I'm thinking, okay, so like, how did I get my job? Did I get my job through myself? Or was he the one that gave me my job? Is he the one that gives me my provision? Is he the one and the source of my finances? And then another posing question is then, have I made that provision common? Like, what have I done with his provision? I know we've been talking about this over the past month about, you know, our finances and, you know, like every week is a different level, but I just thought that this week was really cool because if they are high priests, then we are priests, and it's our job to steward what's in the home. And so then what am I stewarding within the home, in my home? With his provision, is it a part of his system? Have I come underneath his system, or am I still my own system and my own provision, my own job? I've made it common, but now I want the blessings of his system to overflow into my common workplace that I've created to be common. And then I'm upset about my finances because they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. Or because another thing she said was... So that was cool, was when his system plays out, you're gonna see it. So then I'm like, okay, what am I, like, this is my sixth year at work. It's December, it's gonna be my sixth year. And so then what does that look like for the seventh year at my job? So I'm trying to think too, like how the fisherman would have thought, like, okay, well, I don't grow vegetables, so what do I do on my sixth year? So, but that's me having to take my common and now submitting my life and my work and my provision and my job to his system, which then would make the provision from that system also his. So then, am I making my finances common? Am I profaning that system? His system or my system? I mean, it could be my system. That's not his system. Mm-hmm. So it's just a lot of weird questions that I'm like having to address in myself with my job. And then like, do I like my job? Which is his system. You know, it's his provision. And so I'm just kind of, it's just kind of, my head messes with a lot of thoughts when I think about my provision. Mm-hmm. And is it in his system? And do I trust that system? Or do I trust in my own ability to make my system work?
Right.
And then deem it holy when I've made it common.
Yeah.
Right. So, Mom started this off with talking about redeeming and restoring. So, there's still a chance for my land to be redeemed so that it can be restored. Mm-hmm. There's still a chance for my finances to be redeemed so that they can be restored. Mm-hmm. So I just think that was just kind of cool to think about. So, you guys, mull over that while we pass this around. Oh, and first fruits tonight?
Next week.
Next week. So think about it tonight or next week.
All right, you guys, as you are just, we're passing that around. Mom and Dad, I just really appreciate you releasing and just appreciate your, who you are to us. And your ability to, like, there's nothing more treasured than having a to be mothered and fathered. That we have the luxury and the benefit of being able to have a mother and a father consume the scriptures and be able to administer those and highlight the things that are specifically for us. That is a gift. To have something like already applied and already in the where we are at as a community and as a family. And we're thankful to have your voice and we're thankful that you're home. We're thankful to hear from you when you were releasing about having his standard is a good thing. That you are a perfect example of that standard being consistent in our house. And that is a blessing. That we are not cancerous or traumatized because there's consistency in how you, like, you're consistent with yourselves, you're consistent with us, you're consistent in your lifestyle. And that is such, I feel like I have been saying this, but that, I don't think we know how good we have it. To have such a gift in such a, like, that we have, we reap so much of the benefit that you are not afforded.
Yeah.
That we get them. And they don't have them for them. So don't treat them common tonight and act like, or just walk away from what they're administering and, yeah. And just... When she's saying, one of the last things they spoke about was stay in today. So stay in today.
Yeah.
You were afforded a mother and a father to release a word over our lives to safeguard exactly where we are. And exactly what we need to be apprehending to be able to apply his standard. And we have the luxury and the benefit to just follow.
Yeah, yes.
To just, like, consume and respond and do. We don't have to be alone. We don't have to figure it out ourselves. We don't have to meander through. That we have direction and fortitude and advancement and that is specific application. And that is a treasured gift that we have. So even in that, that is a simple way to practice making something holy in our heart. That we've been given a gift. And we didn't have to think about that. Think about when you go, and even when we're researching our other methods, as we're reading the scriptures, as we're listening to other people, as we're of course, Yahweh, of course, he's speaking. But we just were given, like, this is what you need to pay attention to. This is what's standing out, and this is where you are right now. That is like, you have a personal trainer right here telling you what you need for today.
Yeah.
So don't go, yeah, don't, we don't have to just use Google, and they do.
Yeah.
They have to figure it out.
Yeah.
You don't.
Yeah.
So don't make it common. This isn't common.
Yeah.
It's not common for you because it's yours. You're here. Like, he gave us them to be able to get on that narrow of narrow and to follow. So there's a couple things that I just, as a family, I just wanted to highlight quickly. When she's talking about, like, you're disillusioned, that those systems in the background are running of, he's just going to take care of this so it doesn't really matter. Know that you're disillusioned.
Yeah.
So just know it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you're wrong. And that's okay.
Yeah.
Because that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to be wrong, get the wrong out so we can be made right. Because everybody in here wants to be holy.
Yes.
You wouldn't be here if you didn't.
Yep.
So no, you're disillusioned. I think I'm saying that wrong. Like you're literally, it's like waking up out of like, what, like those cults where you're like, I had no idea. No joke. Every one of us dismissed half the Bible. We had no idea. So just know that tonight when you go home and you get in a fight, or tomorrow morning when you're wrestling the word, you're wrong. And it's okay. So be wrong. And know that there's half of you that's trying to dismiss things. Just know that, okay, this week I'm going to be super heightened to like I'm trying, like I'm making things just not a big deal. Oh, it's not a big deal. I'm, you know, whatever.
Or the just, flip side, if you're neurotic, it's not a big deal.
Yes.
Everything's
yes.
He's not going to do it.
Yes. Like, yeah, just know, like, he's bringing you out of being, oh my God, I can, brainwashed. He's bringing you out of being brainwashed so that you can be, like, washed in him so we can be holy. So stop fighting the fight and just, like, lay down to what he's saying or what somebody else is pointing out. And want it. So when she's, so know you're disillusioned, and because of that disillusionment, you think all of this is just like a good class.
Yeah.
That we're just like, oh, it's so fun to learn about Jesus. Right? There's a part of us, if we still think, just like she said, if we still think we're going to like get taken up and it doesn't matter in the end, then there is a part of us that dismisses like a third of everything. Or more, right? Because we're like, this isn't like he's going to take care of it.
Yep.
Well, he's not going to take care of it. You are. So you better get it figured out.
Yeah.
And now's
yeah.
your chance. Because the test is coming.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You're going to be tested on all of this. On whether you know him. And that test is going to be life and death. Shofar blows. And you may or may not hear it.
Yep.
And that cost, that regret, is going to be crushing. So don't, so again, don't treat this as common or not a big deal. But like, be so hungry that I so want to be holy now, not later on. So know you're just know you're brainwashed and that you don't want to be.
Yes.
And that is a good thing.
Yeah.
And that we're not holy. You're not holy yet. Which is also a good thing. Because we just realized we wanted to be.
Yeah.
Just found out. and stay in today.
Yeah.
Right? I just repeating what was taught. If we're not knowing how to honor Shabbat, then don't try to figure out the millennium reign. Or whatever. Don't jump ahead. Don't go around.
Yeah.
Like, get it down. What did he say about your marriage? What did he say about being clean? What did he say about, like, those things?
Yeah.
Are you asking questions? Are you, like, eating this? A common thing in our family is if we're not asking questions, we're probably not doing it. We've heard that said. That's kind of like, right? If we're not applying it, just like any class. If you're going to class without any questions, you may not actually be applying it. So let's work on applying it. So come with questions. Right? Because we want to be holy. And we want to reveal our unholiness so it can be made holy. So don't be scared if it's like, oh, all this stuff just came up.
Yeah.
Which is normal in our family. I'm just saying it out loud.
Thank you for listening to this message from Kingdom Heirs International. If you have received insight and revelation with this message, we invite you to claim that revelation by trading on the trading floor with this ministry. You can do that at kingdomheirsflag.org. Thank you.